life. And there's a common thread among people who write about this experience. And they said that the worst part of it isn't the things that you might imagine. It's not putting on the raggedy clothes, or being dirty, or unshaven, or smelly. It's not having to eat at soup kitchens, or even eating the results of dumpster diving, or having to beg for money in the streets. The worst thing is the way that others look right past you. The way that you just become invisible to the rest of the world. And remember, these people that are experiencing this are folks who are accustomed to getting attention. You know, most of us know that when we walk into a store or whatever, you're taken seriously. If I walk into a car dealership, you know, they don't know my finances, but because of the way I appear, they take me seriously. They assume that I can afford a car, I want a car, I can bring it to business, and so forth. But when you work homeless and destitute, people just look right past you. You know, when you see somebody like that at the side of the street begging for money at the red light, your eyes are straight ahead. When you walk past somebody, don't look down, eyes ahead. And so this dehumanizing, becoming invisible, is what they found to be the most soul-crushing. The parable today of the rich man and Lazarus is really a story of being invisible. Lazarus has become invisible to the rich man. Eyes ahead, don't acknowledge, don't pay attention. Now, we often hear this parable as being about Lazarus, and of course, there is a certain focus there because Lazarus is the only one whose name we learn. We're never told the name of the rich man. And he's the one we tend to sympathize with in the story. But the story is really told about the rich man. He's the only one who has a choice in the story. He's the one that's responsible for his decision. He's the one who lives out the consequences of his choices. We actually know nothing of Lazarus except that he was very poor. We don't know if he was a good man or a bad man. We don't know if he was lazy or if he was willing. We don't know if he was handicapped or had some limitation that caused his poverty. All we know is that he hung out at the rich man's gate. Probably the richest man in the region, hoping that he might at least get some cast off, a few scraps. And Jesus sets up a rather dramatic contrast for us. The rich man, we're told, is dressed in purple and fine linen, the most expensive types of clothes available. Dyeing purple was very difficult and expensive, and the weaving of fine linen was a very labor-intensive process. So those were the most expensive clothes that one could get. Lazarus, on the other hand, is covered in sores. His clothing is not even worth a mention. The most notable thing about his appearance was the sores. The rich man, we're told, feasted sumptuously. Now this isn't even a once-a-week feast. We're told he feasted sumptuously every day. Lazarus would have been happy just to have the scrap, the peel from his banana, the pod from his tree, from his peas, would have made Lazarus happy. We're told that Lazarus' condition was such that the dog licked his sore. but the rich man, the blood Lazarus becomes visible. He didn't even know it. He just walked past. And it wasn't until they were both gone, and Lazarus was in the bosom of Abraham, and the rich man was in Hades, that he suddenly took notice. See, the character of the rich man didn't really change, did it? He still only saw, he only noticed Lazarus because now Lazarus can do something for me. Now Lazarus can give me something. And so he asked Abraham to send him with a drop of water on the tip of his finger to relieve his tongue. But Abraham said, no. No, in your life you've got all the good stuff. Lazarus got the bad. And now he is comforted here. And there's a chasm now. There's a separation. There's a division. You can't get from one place to the other. The reality is we actually see ourselves as living in a rather upwardly mobile culture. And we hold up the occasional example of somebody who rises above their circumstance. But the reality is most of the time, for most folks, there is a chasm between the very poor and the very wealthy. And it is, in reality, very rare that one passes from one to the other. Now, for Jesus' hearers, remember that wealth was a sign of God's approval. If one was wealthy, whether that was because you were fortunate to be born into a wealthy family, or because you had been successful in business or whatever, that was seen as a mark of God's approval. And if you were very poor, or if you were handicapped, or if you had some disease that caused you to have sores all over you, then you must have sinned. Remember the man born blind in John chapter 10. Why was this man born blind? Was it because he sinned or somebody before him, one of his ancestors? If you're in a bad state, then you must have done something bad, or your parents or your grandparents or somebody must have done something bad. But Jesus wants to turn that economy on his head. Jesus wants to let them know that it isn't about being rich or poor. That the difference between those who find themselves in the bosom of Abraham and those who find themselves in torment is whether or not you treat with love and kindness and compassion those who are around you, those whom God places before you. See, how we treat one another is what defines our place in God. Now, that may not be a very comfortable truth, but I think that's what Jesus is telling us. That includes people in service positions. I told you before, a pet peeve of mine is the folks are rude to waitstaff in restaurants. Or it might be the poor, or disabled, or those from poor countries somewhere else that just don't quite count as much, that just don't quite matter as much. And so it's our neighbors, our friends, perhaps even us. Now that's not the entirety of our faith. But I would suggest to you that central to our faith, essential to our faith, is how we view and treat those God has placed around us. And it's especially challenging for those who would appear in human terms to have nothing to offer us. They may just be nothing but a burden. but our faith rests, our love in God rests, in how we treat those whom God has placed around us. The rich man that let Lazarus become invisible. My challenge to you would be, who's invisible in your life? Who do you just not see anymore? Is it that poor person on the street? Is it that handicapped person? Is it that shut-in that you just don't see anymore? Is it that person from another country whose troubles seem to be far away and not really our problem? Who is invisible in your life? Now, let me say, I understand that this doesn't mean that we can suddenly take on all the world's problems and fix everybody's problems and so forth. I'm suggesting, rather, that we need to be deliberate about opening our eyes to see those who can so easily become invisible to us. They may even be right here in the church, but they don't quite look like us, or talk like us, or make us comfortable. And so we look past them, and we look over them, and we focus on the ones who are easy and comfortable for us to be with. Now again, I'm not suggesting that we can go fix everybody's problems all the time. But to learn to have open eyes, to learn to see those who can so easily be invisible in the eyes of our society, in the eyes of our culture, in the eyes of our own life. And to ask God, where can I be of service? Where would you have me pick up a drop of water for one in need? Where would you have me reach out? Because you know what? If you don't ask the question, if you don't open the eyes to see, you won't find the opportunity. You won't find the call that God places on us to love and serve others.